Hi, Commander Wiz Withers here, and welcome back to MilitaryLeadershipBlog.com. I just finished reading a biography of a gentleman by the name of Isaac Hopkins. Mr. Hopkins was born in the 1700s in Rhode Island, and he was a farm boy. But by the time he turned 20, he decided he'd had enough of the farm, and he went to sea. He went out on a merchantman, and was part of the trade runs that went back and forth between New England and the West Indies down the Caribbean. And by the time he was 25 years old, Hopkins had command of his own merchant vessel. And he became a very prosperous businessman. And in later years, during the French and Indian War and in the years leading up to the American Revolution, he was also a privateersman. These were vessels that were authorized by the Continental Congress to harass enemy shipping. And any prizes they took would get turned over to the colonies, and then the ship crews would get paid based on the profits from those vessels. Now, as the Revolution, American Revolution, really started heating up, Congress did two things. They set up a Continental Army under command of General George Washington. And then, after a lot of debate because of the expense, they went ahead and outfitted four small vessels for naval use. And this was the birth of the U.S. Navy. And in overall charge of these four vessels, they put Commodore Isaac Hopkins. And as soon as I read that, I'm thinking, holy mackerel. This guy, he's the first fleet admiral. He is the first chief of naval operations in the Navy. How come I've never heard of him? I mean, I'm not saying that I am like the world's expert in naval history or anything like that. Like, I've read everything, but you know, I know enough that I should recognize this. And I went to the Naval Academy, for crying out loud. They have monuments to everything there. And I'm thinking, why do I not know who this guy is? And I started reading about his career as the commander-in-chief of the fleet. I mean, his ships had the first victory of a U.S. warship at sea. And they also had the first successful amphibious assault. Now these are significant things. But as I started reading about the end of his career, I think I started to see what the problem was, because he recognized that Congress gave him his authority and that Congress gave him the money to outfit the vessels. But when it came to taking Congress's direction on what he should do, well, he just blew him off. He said, those guys are lawyers. They have no idea what happens out here on the sea. And he just ignored them. Well, now, you can imagine, it didn't take too long for Congress to say, wait a second, hang on here. And they called him back to Philadelphia, and they brought him in for hearings, and they eventually censured him. And when they did that, he was embarrassed, he got really bitter, and he just started publicly criticizing Congress and individual members of Congress. To the point, it got so bad to the point where Congress said, we're not going to put up with this anymore, and they just fired him. And they didn't actually replace him with anybody. They just took his four ships and gave them to different commanders, one of whom was John Paul Jones. And that's a name that we're much more familiar with. So I'm looking at this, and I said, here is a man who epitomized command at sea at that time. I mean, you don't become a commander of a ship at 25 years old, and you don't stay commander of ships for like 40 years without having some idea of how to lead people. He's eminently qualified as a leader. But where his downfall was, is he either could not, or just plain did not, follow. And I don't think there's a debate that good leadership also involves good followership. But he just didn't do it. And the result is, and any successes he had were more than eclipsed by other things going on, and he just kind of faded into the dust of history, as it were. You know, it's just a very, very, very sad thing to think about it. There are times as leaders that we disagree with those to whom we are responsible. And I started thinking about my own checkered success in that kind of environment. And my question for you is, how, as a leader, how do you handle the situation where you disagree with those to whom you report? Now, I'm not saying if they're asking you to do something illegal or immoral, that's completely different. But I'm just talking about you just disagree with their strategy or tactics. How do you handle a situation like that? And at what point do you either go along or you depart from what they're telling you to do? If you have any experience in situations like this, I'd really, really appreciate if you could leave some comments on the blog and let us know how you handled it and if you would change anything if the situation faced again. I look forward to reading your comments. And so until next time then, for MilitaryLeadershipBlog.com, I'm Commander Wiz Withers. Thanks for listening.